Casey carried his saddle and blanket up to the sar. He took a few moments to gently scratch the reddish-brown gelding's face and neck.
You ready to get up in the hills again?
The last couple of days had seen a great deal of scouting up and down steep slopes thick with forest, but that sorrel had never complained.
We'll scout the other side of the little river today. Maybe our luck will change.
Casey threw the saddle on and tightened the cinch. Then, taking one last look to make sure his fire had gone out, he stepped up in the saddle and left the peaceful campsite beside the Mountain Fork River. Striking no sign of anyone south of the Little, Casey spent that day following streams up into the hills, counting on blind luck to at least give him a trail to follow. But it was to no avail. He found nothing more than a half-rotted shack, apparently abandoned years before. Just short of frustration, he feared he was only wasting time looking for a needle in a haystack. Consequently, he decided to ride into the little settlement of Broken Bow the next day on the chance that Royer Jr. had been seen in town. Pete Drucker looked up from his forge when Casey walked the sorrel slowly by. Recognizing the deputy who had gone after Joseph Big Eagle's killer, Pete walked out in the street to hail him.
What brings you back to town, deputy?
Howdy. Drucker, ain't it?
Pete nodded.
I'm looking for somebody. You seen any strangers in town lately?
Nope. Well, yeah. I reckon I have. A woman.
A woman?
Yeah. You might have hit town at just the right time, because there ain't no law here. She came into town on foot almost a week ago. Wasn't carrying nothing but the clothes on her back, telling a tale about somebody killing her husband and his brother. I think she's half crazy. Said she'd been wandering around in the woods for days. She looked it. Her clothes were all torn, and she had scratches all over her face and arms.
Where is she now? Is she still here?
Yeah, she's still here. Mabel Marsh took her in. The poor woman didn't have no place to go, so Mabel and Wiley told her she could stay at their place until they could decide what to do. Wiley was talking about sending word to the Choctaw Light Horse to see if they could send a policeman over to check her story out. You know, she might just be a little touched in the head, but she looks like she's been through a lot. Something happened to her, maybe her husband. But now that you happen to show up, there won't be no need to send for the engine police. You know Wiley, don't you? He runs a general store. He and Mabel live in some rooms in the back of the store.
Yeah, I know Wiley. I'll go over and talk to the woman. The man I'm looking for is an older man. Might still be wearing a bandage on his left arm. He's riding with a younger man, his son.
No, I ain't seen nobody like that. Matter of fact, things have been pretty peaceful since you was here last time. You talk to that woman. She might be crazy, but she might know something about them two you're looking for.
Much obliged.
Inside the general store, Casey found Wiley behind the counter.
Well, looky here. How you doing, deputy? What you doing back in Broken Bow?
Mr. Marsh.
Casey walked over to the counter.
I reckon you must have took care of Billy Blanton, because we don't see hide nor hear of him since you went after him. We dug a right nice grave for the engine policeman right next to the graveyard.
I appreciate it. I understand you and your wife took in a strange woman a few days ago.
Yeah, we sure did. Are you looking for her?
No, not for her, but I'd like to talk to her if she's well enough to talk. I sort of got the impression talking to the blacksmith that she might not be right in the head.
No, she ain't that way at all. She was half starved and wore out. Poor thing. She watched her husband and brother-in-law get shot down and had to run for her life. She just needed to rest up and get some nourishing food inside of her. She's got family in Oklahoma City, and as soon as she's up to it, she's going to go there. With our help, of course. It's kind of strange how you showed up before we could send for a lawman to go after those fellas that shot her husband.
I'd like to talk to her.
No, I'll get her.
Wiley went directly to a door in the rear of the store.
Maybelle, bring Bonnie out here. There's a lawman that wants to talk to her.
Mabel Marsh entered the store a few minutes later, followed by a smallish, slender woman of perhaps 30 years of age. It was difficult for Casey to be sure because of the many healing scratches and the hollow circles under her eyes. Her hair was neatly combed and she wore clean clothes, however, a fact that Casey attributed to Mabel Marsh's care.
I didn't think you'd got word to the marshal already.
No, I didn't. He just showed up.
Mabel turned to give Bonnie a gentle smile.
Come, girl. He's from the marshal's office in Fort Smith. He needs to talk to you.
Bonnie stepped forward, her eyes averted so as not to meet the lawman's gaze, as if she were guilty of something.
Ma'am, I understand you've been through a tough time. You mind telling me about it?
He listened with interest while the shy and obviously frightened woman related her encounter with the man who killed her husband and his brother. There was little doubt in Casey's mind regarding her sanity when she described the two assailants. He was curious after hearing her description of the older of the two men.
The old man, you say he was a one-armed man?
He wasn't one-armed. He had two arms, but he didn't have a hand on one of them.
Which arm?
I don't know. The left one, I guess. I was so scared. They killed my husband. Just shot him down.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I know you've been through a lot.
She looked up then to meet Casey's gaze.
Are you gonna get the man that killed my husband?
Yes, ma'am. I am.
He studied her face for a moment, trying to decide if she was up to what he was about to propose.
That cabin you talked about, I've been looking for it for 2 days, and I ain't had much luck. Could you take me to it, or at least tell me how to find it?
I don't know if I can. I didn't know which way I was running. I just happened to come out here in Broken Bow.
Disappointed, he started thinking about the chances of finding her trail and possibly following it back to the cabin.
I think I might be able to find the cabin from the river, the way we found it the first time when me and my husband and Leonard had left the place where the two rivers joined.
Are you up to it? Well, I don't want to cause you no trouble, but I ain't had no luck finding that cabin.
I'll go.
Oh, Bonnie, are you sure you want to do that? It sounds mighty dangerous to me. You got away with your life the first time. Are you sure you want to take another chance?
Like I said, it's up to her. I don't mean to push her, but she could save me a lot of time if she knows how to find that cabin.
I'll go. I want you to kill the sons of bitches that killed my husband.
All right, then. We'll start back first thing in the morning, all right?
Bonnie nodded firmly.
You bring her back here safely, Deputy.
I will.
It was a new experience for Casey. He'd never traveled with a woman before, and he wasn't sure whether he was setting too hard a pace or if he should stop to let her rest or go to the bushes if she had to. He was afraid that she might be following along behind him, reluctant to tell him that she needed to stop. He soon learned that it was needless work. Bonnie Bowden was a strong woman, accustomed to the sacrifices necessary to survive as the wife of the drifter that her husband had been. Roy Blanton's cabin had been her longest period spent under a roof in the past 4 years. Open camps in rugged places, lying low after her husband and his brother had stolen a cow or somebody's chickens, riding hard lest the local law catch up with them. That was the life she knew during 8 years of marriage. She'd been at first fearful when Casey showed up at the store wanting to question her, but that was only because he was the law. She had done nothing to be in trouble with the law, but fear of the law had been a constant companion during her entire marriage. Now that she was assured that Casey sought only to catch the men who had destroyed her family, the toughness that characterized her returned. Much to her surprise, they came to the confluence of the two rivers after only a half day's ride. She'd stumbled around in the forest for 2 days and nights. Now she realized that she must have wandered far and walked in circles more than once. Casey pulled the sorrel to a stop on the riverbank.
Here's where the mountain fork runs into the Little. I reckon you'll be taking the lead from here.
She guided her horse up beside his and stopped. looking up and down the river, she wasn't really sure where she was. And she began to have doubts that she could deliver on her claim to take Casey to the cabin. He watched her closely as she jerked her head left and right, obviously searching for something she recognized. He had a distinct feeling that it had been a wasted effort bringing her with him.
Are you sure this is the right spot on the river?
Yes, sir.
She turned in the saddle to point back at the fork of the two rivers.
It was just this side of where those two join.
She continued to scan the riverbank on the far side.
It don't look the same, though. It's been over a month ago, and I didn't have any reason to believe I was going to have to remember any of this. We were on the other side of the river, and we crossed over to this side where a little sandbar stuck out like an island. It was shallow water there.
All right, let's ride along the bank till we find that sandbar. You lead, and I'll follow you.
Still a little uncertain, but determined to do her best, she rode slowly along the riverbank, back toward the way they had come just that morning. After a ride of approximately 20 minutes, she suddenly pointed toward a little spit of land that protruded from the north bank.
There it is! That's where we crossed over to this side.
She urged her mount forward and hurried to a shallow gully that extended down to the water.
See? Right here's where we rode up out of the river. Look down under the bank, right at the water. There's a stream coming out under the ground running into the river.
She pointed, and he could see that she was right. Turning her horse to her left, she rode about 50 yards up into the cottonwoods and oaks to a small clearing where a strong stream worked its way down toward the river.
Yes, this is the place. William said that this is the same stream that's underground where it comes out of the river. Him and his brother decided we ought to cross back over and follow it on up into those hills.
She pointed toward a tree-covered ridge to the south.
All right. I reckon I'd best take the lead now.
His confidence was rising now that Bonnie seemed so sure of herself. It was ironic, he thought, that he had passed this particular point on the river at least 3 times during the past couple of days. He attributed his carelessness to the fact that the stream, when it reached the river, was actually underground, and he had missed it. He had spent time scouting any obvious streams that fed into the river, speculating that Blanton's cabin had to be built near water. After half an hour of pushing through thick brush and tangled shrubs, following the meandering stream up into the hills, Casey had to wonder what possessed Bonnie's husband and his brother to continue the difficult trail. He was just about to decide that Bonnie had been mistaken when he caught his first glimpse of the cabin.
Damn.
He was amazed to see a fair-sized house built close against the hill behind it. He could imagine what a welcome and unexpected sight a sturdy, unoccupied structure had been to Bonnie and her husband. He dismounted.
We'll leave the horses here. I want you to stay with them while I slip up a little closer, see what's what. All right?
I'm not sure.
Take this.
He gave her his pistol.
I don't think you'll have to use it, but hang on to it just in case.
She accepted the weapon eagerly. He nodded and smiled to reassure her. Then, with rifle in hand, he started up the stream on foot, leaving her to hold the horses. Working his way up through the trees and undergrowth, he arrived at a point a few yards shy of what appeared to be the main trail into the cabin. Picking a large oak tree for cover, he knelt to look over the situation. The house was set in a clearing that left it open in the front and on one side. The other side and the back were almost sitting in the trees. On the clearing side of the house, a small corral had been built, large enough to hold maybe 4 or 5 horses. At the present time, it was empty. One saddled horse was tied at the front porch. It was not the gray horse Roy Blanton rode.
Junior, where's the old man?
It was cause enough to make him hesitate. He needed to know where both men were, and it was his intention to arrest both men. If he moved too soon on Junior, the old man might get away. Maybe there was a chance to circle around to the rear of the cabin and get the jump on Junior. and possibly hold him until the old man showed up. Right now, he couldn't think of anything better. Backing away from the tree, he made his way back down to Bonnie to advise her of his intentions. At first, relieved to see him return, she became uneasy again when he told her what he was gonna do.
There ain't but one of them at the cabin. I think it's the son. I'm gonna try to get around behind and see if I can arrest him before he knows what's happening.
Aren't you gonna shoot him? The young one's the one that shot my husband. He deserves to be shot just like he shot William.
They'll hang.
It don't make any sense to arrest them if you're gonna end up killing them anyway.
I'm sorry, it's the law, so I guess that's the way it'll have to be. You just sit tight down here in this ravine with the horses and you'll be all right. Things don't go the way I want them to and something happens to me, you get on that horse and ride the hell out of here.
Making his way up the slope behind the cabin, Casey moved rapidly under the cover of the dense growth of oaks and pines. When he reached a point directly over the log structure, he descended the hill until he could see it plainly. As Bonnie had said, there was a single window in the back of the house, the very window she had escaped through. He continued his descent down through the woods, moving cautiously from tree to tree, until reaching a large oak no more than 20 yards from the cabin wall. He paused there for a few minutes, watching the open window carefully. If his presence had been discovered, there was no indication from inside the house. Satisfied, he left the large oak and hurried to a position against the cabin wall beside the window. With his back flattened against the log wall, he listened for any sound of movement inside. Sliding along the wall to the window, he slowly inched one eye beyond the frame. At first, he saw no one inside. And then, his eye discovered the sleeping form of Junior Blanton, stretched out on his back on a bedroll. Risking his entire head then, Casey took a broader look around the inside of the cabin. There was no one else, only Junior, dead to the world. His pistol belt hung on a chair back near the door. His rifle was propped against the wall beside it. Casey glanced up at a substantial limb just brushing the cabin roof. Another glance back at the sleeping body on the bedroll, and he decided the odds were in his favor to gain complete surprise. As quietly as he could, he placed his rifle inside the window. Then, he quickly reached up to grab the limb with both hands. He pulled himself up and through the window, feet first.
Pa?
The sound of his feet landing upon the floor roused Junior from his slumber.
Pa?
I ain't your pa. Get on your feet. You're under arrest.
With his rifle leveled at Junior, Casey stepped back to give him room to get up. Junior didn't move at once. He was still rubbing sleep from his eyes. He finally fully realized what was going on.
You're that damn marshal. How'd you get in here?
Get on your feet. We're gonna wait here for you, pa. Where is he?
I don't know.
Junior rolled over on his hands and knees, preparing to get up.
You know, you're about the dumbest lawman I've ever seen. You just walked into your funeral. Ain't no way you're gonna walk out of here alive.
That a fact. Well, if I don't, you won't. Now get up from there.
I'm getting.
Junior moved slowly. Then he suddenly lunged up to attack the deputy. Casey took a quick step to the side and slammed the side of Junior's head with the butt of his rifle. He dropped the stunned outlaw to the floor.
I figured you'd make a dumb move like that. Now I'm gonna have to tie you to a chair while we wait for your pa. Get up.
He glanced around him, looking for a rope while Junior dutifully struggled to his feet. Seeing no rope, Casey prodded Junior in the back with the barrel of his rifle.
Now, Junior, I'm gonna explain something to you nice and slow so you'll understand what I'm saying. We're gonna walk out that door and get that rope off your saddle. We're gonna do it real easy so you don't get any ideas about trying to run and make me waste a cartridge on your worthless ass. Then we'll go back in the cabin and wait for your pa. Is that clear enough for you to understand?
Junior nodded.
You're as good as dead coming here like this. You're just saving Pa the trouble of finding you.
Well, you never know, do you? Now get that rope off of there.
Junior did as he was told, walking up to the horse and untying the rawhide string that held the coil of rope. When it was free, he suddenly spun around, threw it at Casey's head, and took off running across the clearing toward the cover of the woods. Casey shook his head in weary response. He didn't want to shoot and alert Roy if the old man was close by, but he couldn't let Junior get away. Taking his time to make sure of his target, he raised his rifle and sighted on the running man's leg. Junior went down with a bullet in his chest, but Casey had not yet pulled the trigger. He glanced up then to see Bonnie standing at the edge of the clearing, the pistol still pointing chest high. Surprised and bewildered, Casey could do nothing for a long moment but stand there gawking at the trembling woman as she lowered the weapon, fired a second shot into the body already lying still.
Bonnie, don't shoot, he's dead!
He ran to meet her. She made no move to resist when he took the gun from her hand, seemingly glad to surrender.
What are you doing here? Why'd you shoot?
He was getting away. I couldn't let him get away.
He started to tell her that he was not getting away, that he was going to shoot him in the leg. But he decided it was no use telling her now. What was done was done. But her vengeful action created a whole new set of problems.
Come on, we best get inside. I don't know where Roy is, but if he's anywhere close, he's bound to have heard those shots.
He hurried her toward the door.
Where are the horses?
I left them in the ravine.
All right, go on inside. If the old man is anywhere about, he ain't gonna be safe out here in this clearing.
Casey ran to Junior's body, grabbed him by his heels, and dragged him out of sight in the edges of the wood. With any luck, Roy may not have been close enough to have heard the two shots Bonnie fired, and he might successfully set a trap for the old man.
No!
He stopped to listen, but for only an instant before he realized the origin of the mournful wail.
Shit!
Running flat out, Casey sprinted toward the cabin with rifle slugs kicking up the dirt around his heels. Charging through the doorway as chunks of pine were blasted from the log wall, he slammed the door shut. He was met by the terrified face of Bonnie Bowden.
He's found us!
I reckon he has, and he's got us in a fix.
Casey looked around the cabin they now found themselves trapped in.
God, this ain't no good. He can keep us pinned up in here forever, or until he decides to burn us out.
He thought it over for no more than a few seconds before deciding.
I'd rather be outside with him in the cabin. Come on, we're getting out of here. Kitchen window!
Almost 200 yards from the cabin now, Casey and Bonnie made their way over the ridge that formed one side of the ravine where the horses were tied. After going out the window, Casey had not sought to set an easy pace in consideration for the woman, but he soon found out that that was hardly necessary. For Bonnie stayed right behind him, stride for stride, until reaching the ravine.
Now stay here.
Where are you going?
Back to the cabin.
Not without me, you're not.
It's too damn dangerous.
You've seen me shoot. I can and will handle a gun. Anyway, I'd rather be in a gunfight than be left behind in these woods. The last time I was left in the woods by myself, I got lost for 2 days.
Casey took a moment to think it over. He did not like the idea of placing a woman in harm's way. On the other hand, two of them with rifles could snipe away at Blanton from two sides if they caught him in the cabin.
All right, but if he wants to surrender, we're going to take him alive. You understand?
I understand.
Let's go then. I figured we'd circle up the slope until we cross that main trail into the cabin. That way we'll come up on the cabin a little above it, like he did.
Giving the sorrel a gentle nudge with his heels, he was away. She followed right behind him. Casey set the sorrel on the general line, and the stout chestnut gelding made his way up through the trees without further direction. Spotting a narrow break in the leaves of the trees up ahead, Casey guessed they were approaching the path. A few yards more and he suddenly pulled his horse to an abrupt stop and held his hand up to warn Bonnie to do the same. With thought he had caught sight of something moving on the path above him.
Be still.
He stared at the opening in the trees.
A rider.
Casey pulled his rifle from the saddle sling as he dismounted.
Hold the horses here.
Making his way quickly up through the frequent patches of rhododendron among the oaks, he hurried to cut the rider off. Angling across the ridge, he managed to gain the cover of a large tree trunk that afforded him a clear view of the path and the rider now approaching. With his rifle ready to fire, he prepared to challenge the rider. Hardly able to believe his eyes, he couldn't suppress the grin that crept across his face when he recognized the man. He stepped out from behind the tree when the rider was almost beside him.
Buck, what the hell you doing here? You lost?
Taken completely by surprise, Buck reined back so hard that he caused his horse to rear up on its hind leg.
Casey! Damn, boy, scared the hell out of me.
Buck looked around him as if expecting someone else to pop up out of the woods.
How the hell did you find this place?
I had a guide.
Casey turned his head back toward the slope.
Bring him on up, Bonnie.
Buck saw the woman emerge from the trees leading Casey's horse.
Who the hell is that?
Casey explained the woman's presence and the circumstances that led her to cross his path. When she came up to him, he introduced her.
Buck here is a deputy marshal. He's been dogging Roy Blanton for more than a few years. Buck, this is Bonnie Bowden. Now, how come you're here? And how did you know how to find this trail? You know where this path leads?
I was looking for you. I was afraid you'd go get yourself killed trying to track Roy Blanton by yourself.
He paused to grace Bonnie with a grin.
Of course, I didn't know you took on a new partner. I just happened to stumble on this little trail up through the hills. Where's it go?
Well, if you kept going, you'd have found yourself on Roy Blanton's front porch.
No. I knew you had a hideout around these parts somewhere. Reckon it's a good thing I ran into you first. You know if Roy and Junior are at the cabin? Have you seen him?
The old man is the only one left. Junior's dead.
Then he explained how Junior had met his fate while trying to escape.
And this lady shot him down. Did you get a chance to talk to him before she shot him?
No, I was just fixing to tie him up when he took off running. I was going to shoot him in the leg to stop him, but he was headed right for Bonnie, so she shot him. She thought he was going to get away.
So that just leaves one of the Blantons alive. Old Roy himself.
That's right. He had Bonnie and me holed up in his cabin about an hour ago. We had to hop out the back window. We were fixing to circle back when you came along, so you came at the right time. With three rifles, we can make it pretty high for him if we catch him before he leaves the cabin. Especially since we can cover that back window. I'm thinking that maybe we can take some of the fight out of him now that all his sons are gone.
I doubt it. He's more likely to be meaner than ever. Ain't much chance taking old Roy alive.
I'd like to give him a chance to surrender. It don't seem right that out of five of them, we can't bring one to face a judge.
Oh, sure. We'll give him a chance to give up. But I don't think he'll take it.
Casey stepped up in the saddle.
Well, we can't stand around here talking about it. We don't know if he's still there. He might be fixing to slip up on us while we're jawing about what we're going to do.
Picking up a shovel, Roy Blanton went out to the side of the house opposite the corral and selected a spot for Junior's grave. With no hand on his left arm, he found it extremely difficult to handle the shovel in the hard ground. After managing to barely scrape away a small area of dirt, he encountered a maze of roots from the oaks next to the cabin.
Oh, God damn it!
He paused to lean on the shovel. He jumped, startled, as a rifle slug snapped the handle of his shovel in two. With no time to determine where the shot had come from, he ran for the cabin. Fully as surprised as Blanton, Casey jerked his head around when he heard Buck's shots.
I thought we were going to give him a chance to give up.
Damn, I forgot. I guess I just reacted without thinking about it when I saw him standing there. I'll give him a chance now.
Buck cupped his hands in front of his mouth.
Roy Blanton, this is the law. We're giving you a chance to surrender. Throw down your weapons and come out here with your hands up.
Buck Avery. Is that you?
Yeah, it's me, Roy. Your killing and robbing days are over. Throw down your gun and walk out here in a clearing.
The hell you say? By God, I've bought and paid for your ass. You owe me. So why don't you just come in and get me?
What? What's he talking about, Buck?
Damn if I know. I think the old fool's got his brains all scrambled up. Drinking too much whiskey, I reckon.
Blanton, there ain't no use in any more killing. Come on out with your hands up. And I'll give you my word you'll get a fair trial.
Kiss my ass, you murdering son of a bitch. I may be old, but I ain't took leave of my senses yet. You want me, you come and get me. We'll see who's still standing when it's over.
We best move away from this spot. He's already figuring out where we are. We're gonna have to smoke him out of there. You done the right thing, Casey. Roy ain't gonna be took alive.
I reckon you're right. I guess he's lost too many sons already to trust us now.
I expect we best split up. Cover that cabin from three sides, since we got us three rifles.
Buck grinned at Bonnie then.
That is, if you can't shoot that rifle you're toting. I ain't heard you say a word since I got here.
Don't you worry none about me. I can use a rifle. I just hope I'm the one that gets him.
She'll do. Now, there's windows on only three sides of the cabin. There ain't none on the side where the corral is, so we can cover all the windows. I figure if it gets too hot for him and he tries to break out, it'll most likely be the front or the back. So what do you say you cover the front, I'll cover the back. And we can let Bonnie cover the side with the window. That all right with you, Casey?
I guess so.
Casey turned to Bonnie.
You got plenty of cartridges for that rifle?
She held up the cartridge belt she had taken along with Junior's rifle.
I guess we're ready then.
Once all three were in place, the shooting began in earnest with the idea of ripping the cabin to pieces, concentrating on the windows, which offered the only positions from which Roy could return fire. After half an hour, it was obvious to Casey that the solid log sides would forever withstand the rifle fire. And the only hope was for Roy to get caught by crossfire coming through the windows. While he considered the futility of it, a random thought crossed his mind.
How did Buck know there was a window in the back of the cabin?
Puzzled him for a moment, until he decided that Buck had probably assumed that when he told him he and Bonnie had fled the cabin before. He shrugged and reloaded. Inside the cabin, Roy was hugging the floor to avoid the deadly bullets crossing from three sides. He tried to return fire, but he found it impossible to shoot out of any window without exposing himself. He decided that it was too hot for him to remain. It was time to abandon the cabin. On his hands and knees, he crawled over to the bed where Junior's body lay. Grabbing the footboard, he dragged the bed away from the wall. Taking an extra ammunition belt and a few basic essentials to survive in the woods, said farewell to his son and prepared to leave. Buck had purposely chosen to station himself at the rear of the cabin where neither Casey nor the woman could see him. Like Casey, he soon concluded that they could fill the house with bullets until they ran out with no positive results. Blanton was going to have to be smoked out. They had no torches to light up and nothing to make a decent torch with the green bushes and trees. But he had something better. He'd come prepared. While the shooting continued from the front to one side, he worked his way down through the forest to the back wall. With his back pressed flat against the wall, he reached inside his shirt and pulled out a stick of dynamite he had carried in his saddlebags. Buck lit the fuse. When there were only a few inches left, he tossed it through the window beside him and ran for cover. The explosion tore out one whole wall of the cabin. Casey and Bonnie stared in disbelief at the smoking structure.
Woo! Hot damn! I reckon that got his attention.
Buck ran to the cabin and scrambled through the back window. Suddenly, the front door slammed open as Casey charged in, checking himself just in time to avoid shooting Buck. The room was filled with thin gray smoke, but not enough to hamper vision. Buck and Casey looked at each other, astonished. Roy was not there. The body on the bed was clearly that of his son, Junior.
What the hell?
A few moments later, Casey supplied the answer. Curious as to why the bed had been moved toward the middle of the room, he looked beyond it. Next to the wall, several boards had been removed from the floor, revealing a hole just wide enough for a man to squeeze into. Casey peered cautiously into the hole.
Looks like a tunnel.
Well, I'll be damned. That old son of a bitch had himself an escape tunnel.
Buck glanced up to meet Casey's gaze.
Wonder how long he's been gone.
Damn.
Both men ran out of the cabin and rounded the corner to the side wall. Searching frantically, they charged into the trees and brush.
Here it is. Here's where he came out.
The opening was just barely inside the tree line. He looked around him in case he was about to get shot at.
Watch yourself. That old fox might be drawing a bead on one of us right now.
It was a thought that Casey had already considered. And then something else occurred to him.
Bonnie.
This was the side of the house she was covering. In the excitement of the dynamite blast and the discovery of the tunnel, neither he nor Buck had noticed that Bonnie had not come down from her position on the hillside.
Oh, God.
Casey immediately started up through the trees.
What is it?
Casey continued up the slope. He didn't call out for her because he had a sinking feeling in his gut that she wasn't going to answer. Upon reaching a boulder about halfway up, he found what he had dreaded. It appeared that Blanton had taken her by surprise from the rear. Her throat was slit from ear to ear, and she lay on a bed of oak leaves that were splotched with her blood. He knelt down on one knee beside her and looked around him for signs of her killer. There was nothing to break the silence of the deep woods. The rifle and cartridge belt were gone. He was devastated. He felt responsible for her death. He should never have let her come along. He should have left her at the river after she found the stream for him, or sent her back on to Broken Bow. Anything to avoid this. He was still kneeling beside her when Buck came up the hill behind him.
Oh, now that's a real shame. She's a spunky little lady, too. We got a panther on the run, boy. We'll have to let her be for now. Roy's on foot. He's gonna be looking for a horse.
Right.
Casey sprang to his feet, and both men went crashing recklessly through the underbrush in a wild effort to get back to where they had left the horses. They were too late. All three horses were gone.
Damn him. Sure as hell skunked us. Now we're on foot, and he's got the horses. Who'd have thought the old fox had set himself up with a getaway tunnel? I never gave a thought he could get behind us and steal our damn horses.
We're not really on foot. We got his horses.
No, that's a fact.
Buck turned immediately to look toward the ruins of the cabin. There was no horse in the corral, but he remembered then that Blanton hadn't had time to put his horse away and had left it saddled with the reins looped over a corner post next to Junior's. But now, the animal was nowhere to be seen.
It must have jerked loose when that stick of dynamite went off and scared it. Probably didn't run far. We'd better get down there and find it before he does.
They searched, and the search was fruitless.
Oh, damn.
Roy beat us to those horses, too?
Yeah, from the looks of these tracks, he had all the horses with him.
Oh, we're in a hell of a fix.
Buck's face was a mask of irritation, the result of his toes being jammed against the pointed toes of his boots as he made his way down the slope.
These boots sure as hell weren't made for walking. I'm toting too much damn lard to have to walk all over these damn hills.
You won't be carrying as much if we don't catch up with that Blanton and our horses, because we ain't got nothing to eat. Come on, his trail ought to be easy enough to follow.
Wasting no more time, Casey started out, following the obvious trail through the brush. Buck winced as he took the first step after Casey. The August afternoon was hot and humid, even this late in the day. Down near the bottom of the hill, there was no hint of a breeze in the undisturbed leaves on the trees, and the air felt close and heavy. Casey paused to look up through the leaves at the sky.
That doesn't look too good.
Buck followed his line of sight, peering up through the branches at the clouds building up over the hills.
Maybe it'll miss us. A little rain will feel pretty good right now, though.
Reaching the bottom of a narrow ravine, Casey followed the trail through the bushes left with broken limbs by the four horses. As he was about to climb up to the other side of the ravine, he was forced to dive for cover when a rifle slug flew past his ear. He rolled over behind a tree trunk and looked back to see if Buck was all right.
He's up there in that hogback and in pine trees.
Buck pointed toward a high point on the ridge that formed one side of the ravine. Casey stared hard at the spot, hoping to pick Blanton out, but the sun was almost directly behind the little clump of pines, making it difficult to see. The old man was crafty enough to use the setting sun to his advantage. That thought spawned a second thought. The sun would soon be dropping behind the hills, leaving a dense forest in darkness. Thinking the same thing, Buck crawled up beside Casey.
We're gonna have to back up and get on top of that ridge. There ain't no way we're gonna go straight up this slope here without getting our asses shot off.
I ain't sure we've got enough time to go back and circle around him before it gets dark. We'll be stomping around in these woods all night trying to find him. And that's if he's still there by the time we get there. Why doesn't he just take off and leave us to wander around in the bushes?
Because he wants us just as bad as we want him. Maybe more.
Well, what do you want to do?
Might as well pull back, see if we can work around behind him before dark. Rather do that than sit here while he takes target practice.
Suits me.
Casey and Buck started sliding back. When they reached a point where it was safe to stand up again, they backtracked as quickly as possible in a race with daylight as dingy gray clouds continued to drift over the hills. Casey led the way up a wooded slope. Near the top of the ridge, they stopped momentarily.
Damn! That's right on top of us. We're fixing to get our asses wet.
His prediction was not long in fulfillment. The last rays of the setting sun peaked briefly beneath the solid blanket of storm clouds, then disappeared. In a matter of seconds, they found themselves shrouded in darkness.
Shit!
There was no need for further comment, as both men tried to shield their weapons from the water already soaking their clothes, while they thought of their rain slickers rolled up behind their saddles. Casey gave Buck a resigned shake of his head, then pushed on to the top of the ridge. They made their way toward the hogback that Buck had pointed out from below. Because of the rain and the frequent rumbling of thunder, they were forced to move cautiously, stopping to listen every few yards when lightning flashed. Finally, reaching a point some 30 yards below the pine-covered knob, they stopped to look and listen. In a few minutes, another bolt of lightning flashed, illuminating the little stand of pines and telling them that Blanton was no longer there. Both men instinctively looked around them on all sides in case they had stumbled into a trap.
Hell, he's took off!
With Casey still leading, they moved on up into the pines.
Look! Looks like he was lying right here when he was shooting at us.
Casey indicated a patch of disturbed pine needles. With the help of lightning flashes, they were able to determine in which direction Blanton had departed the knob. It appeared that he had gone down the other side of the ridge toward a shallow valley beyond. They started down through the trees as the center of the storm rolled past them. The dank forest became darker and darker, until their progress was slowed to almost a crawl, with them literally feeling their way from tree to tree.
Shit!
Casey heard Buck crash to the ground. Without having to think about it, he threw himself to the ground as two more muzzle flashes split the darkness. As fast as he could bring his rifle up, he aimed at the spots the shots were coming from and fired. Stacy quickly rolled over to the next tree trunk, expecting return fire. It came all right, from a different location. Buck returned fire at the spot.
This ain't getting us nowhere. Our best bet is to try to work our way across this ridge above him. Maybe we can pin him down between us.
All right, but we better not get too far apart or we'll be shooting at each other.
With that in mind, they started inching their way across the slope. When they guessed they were over the general area where they had seen Blanton's last muzzle flash, they separated and prepared to descend the hill.
He might still be in that last spot waiting for us to come after him. One of us will have to draw his fire and the other one will be ready to shoot at his muzzle flash.
It's as good a chance as we'll likely get.
I'll draw his fire and you take the shot. You got a better eye than me.
All right.
I'm going to wait till I get about even with that tall clump of trees yonder.
Buck pointed to the dark outline of treetops halfway down the slope.
You be ready with your rifle, because you're going to have to be quick.
I'll be ready.
Casey immediately started down the hill. When he got to a place approximately even with the tall trees, he stopped and situated himself so as to be able to swing his rifle around about 180 degrees. Then he waited, thinking it was like peering into a bottomless well, his eyes focused on the darkness. Across the slope, he heard a dead branch snap and guessed that it was Buck. He quickly pulled his rifle up to his shoulder, halfway expecting Blanton to fire at the sound. But the forest remained still. Judging from the sound of that broken limb, he figured Buck was just about in position. He held the rifle in place against his shoulder. After what seemed a long interval, he couldn't help but jump when Buck suddenly fired. Almost immediately, the shot was answered from a rocky pocket about 30 yards below him. Casey reacted instantaneously. He wasn't sure, but he could almost swear he heard a dull grunt from his target.
I'm moving, Buck!
Casey started scrambling down the slope.
I hear you.
Buck followed suit. The two deputies converged on the pocket, both men ready to open fire at the slightest movement among the rocks. Moving cautiously from tree to tree, they worked their way down until they could see that the pocket was deserted. Inside the cluster of rocks, they knelt to examine the ground for confirmation that Blanton had been there. Catching sight of a small, dark streak on one side of the rocks, Buck rubbed it against his finger, wiping part of it away. As it was too dark to see what it was, he held it up to his nose.
Blood. You got him.
It was a question now of how badly Blanton was hurt. There may have been a lot more blood around, but it was too dark and rainy to tell. Whatever the severity of the wound, Blanton was still able to run, and if he was able to run, he was still dangerous. To add to their problems, Blanton knew these woods a hell of a lot better than either of the two chasing him. Roy Blanton knelt at the side of the little branch that ran down the center of the shallow valley. He touched the bullet hole and tried to wash away some of the blood from his side. He didn't know how badly he was wounded. All he knew for sure was that it throbbed like hell with each beat of his heart. The fact that he'd been suckered into revealing his position behind those rocks only served to compound his bitterness. His concern now was that he couldn't seem to stop bleeding. When he'd first been hit, he was determined to wait him out, hoping to ambush the two of them. But as the large stain on his shirt continued to spread, the more worried he became that he might die before he settled with them. And the thought of Buck Avery standing over his bled-out corpse was bitter gall to swallow. As the pain increased, he knew he had to get away while he was still strong enough to ride. It was not over. It was one hell of a long ride to White Oak Creek in Texas. That was the only haven available to him for medical attention. His side burning with each movement, he held his hand tightly against the wound and made his way as fast as he could toward the clump of willows where he had left the horses. He found them standing in the rain, their heads down, linked together by the lead rope he had hastily tied on them when he escaped from the tunnel. He climbed up in the saddle and gave the gray a kick with his heels, turning the horse's head toward the stream. His intention was to follow it to the river, then head south to strike the Red River. In the rainy darkness, the descent down the hills was not easy, especially leading four horses behind him. By the time he reached the little river, he was reeling in the saddle, gritting his teeth against the sharp, stabbing pain in his side. The early fingers of daylight found Blanton on the south bank of the river, slumping in the saddle, straining to remain upright. Though reluctant to cut four good horses loose, he realized that they were too much trouble for him in his present condition. He painfully dismounted and untied him from the lead rope. Then he got back in the saddle and prodded the gray gelding to continue. About an hour before sunup, the rain had slackened to a slow drizzle and had stopped completely with the first light of day. Soaked to the skin and dog-tired from a fruitless search in a forest so dark that it would have been possible to walk right by their quarry, the two deputies found themselves at a small stream that wandered through the center of a shallow valley.
By God, we sure as hell stumbled on these.
Buck wearily looked down at the hoof prints in the wet sand. They weren't sure Blanton was not still stalking them until they found the tracks leading toward the river.
Looks to me like old Roy was hurt bad enough to run all right.
Where's he gonna run? If he's hurt that bad, he's gonna be looking for help.
Crawl off someplace and die, I reckon.
Well, he sure as hell got away again, and this time he's got our horses and our possibles. We ain't even got a match to light a fire with.
Casey looked at Buck.
Ugh, you're sure a sorry-looking sight this morning.
You ought to see yourself. You look like you just been pulled out of the river.
They both shrugged simultaneously. There was little choice but to start walking.
Damn, my feet are already sore. Shh, these wet socks ain't helping matters none.
There was brief speculation on whether or not they should climb back up through the woods to bury Bonnie, but conscience gave way to practicality.
Look, we're already losing ground to Blanton. And the woman ain't got no family to worry about her anyhow. I expect we better get started out of here. It's a long walk to Broken Bow.
The thought caused Casey to feel a strong twinge of guilt. He had promised Mabel Marsh that he would bring Bonnie back safely. But what Buck said was true. They followed the stream down to the river and started west along the bank, looking for a shallow place to cross over to the other side. When they finally got to a place that looked to be an easy ford, they started across with Casey in the lead. He was almost in the middle of the river when he suddenly stopped short.
What's the matter? Listen.
Casey held up his hand to silence Buck. He turned around, scanning the bank they had just left, his ear turned toward the wind.
There it is again.
Certain that he recognized the sound, he started wading back toward shore as fast as he could manage in the hip-deep water. Buck, with no idea what had come over his partner, stood amazed, watching him pass. Then he followed him out of the river. Up on the bank again, Casey scoured the tree line until his eye finally caught sight of what he was looking for.
Come on, boy.
In moments, the sorrel gelding padded slowly out of the trees toward his master.
I swear that's a beautiful sight.
The horse obediently walked up to greet Casey.
He must have broke loose.
A few hundred yards up the river, they found Buck's horse grazing beside the water. The discovery caused Buck to speculate.
Blanton must be hurt bad. Ain't likely he'd let them horses go unless it was too much for him to handle.
The horse that Bonnie had ridden had evidently wandered off alone. They were no longer on foot, a situation for which they were extremely grateful. The urgency to go after the wounded outlaw remained. but the first priority upon finding their horses was to make a fire and boil some coffee. While drinking coffee and drying out a little, they talked over Roy Blanton's options, considering the condition he was in. When they thought they were going to be on foot, their intention was to cross the river and walk to Broken Bow in hopes of acquiring horses there. Now, since they were on horseback again, they had to speculate upon Blanton's actions. If it was a doctor he was seeking, there was none in Broken Bow. If his intention was to heal on his own, he might be thinking of reaching Texas, hoping the deputy marshals wouldn't pursue him past the Red River.
For my money, I bet on Texas. He's got some kind of hideout there. Maybe even has family. Hell, those four hellions he raised must have had a mother. Maybe there's a home place somewhere on the other side of the Red.
Well, if there is, the Texas Rangers ain't been able to find it. We ain't got much more to go on. Rain played hell with any tracks we might have found. Might as well head for the Red River. Maybe we'll strike his trail somewhere on this side.
Though it was not spoken by either man, there was no intention to stop at the Texas border. Ready to ride, they started west along the river, counting more on instinct and gut feelings than an actual trail to follow. When they came to a cross trail that ran directly south, Buck suggested that if he were wounded and eager to get to Texas as soon as possible, he'd take the south trail. Casey was in agreement, so they struck out along a wide valley on what appeared to be a well-worn wagon track. It was mid-morning when they crossed another trail that led to the west. Judging by the time it had taken since leaving the banks of the Little River, they agreed that it was most likely the trail to Idabel, over on the railroad.
Looks like we would have seen some tracks showing up by now if we're really on Blanton's tail.
The only fresh hoof prints since the rain were coming from Idabel, turning south toward the Red River.
We might be chasing the breeze out here.
Buck glanced around him at the heavily wooded countryside.
You know, he just might have been hurt so bad he crawled off in the woods somewhere to die.
I don't know. I think if he thought he was dying, he might not have run at all. He'd more than likely sat down and hoped we did find him so he'd have a chance to take somebody with him.
I reckon you're right. We still ain't got no notion where the hell he is.
What do you say we keep on till we strike the Red? If we don't pick up his trail by then, well, I guess we'll have to think of something else.
Yeah, we might as well. I can't think of nothing better.